So now I think we have all of us.
Okay. We are holding on Tess Zion, Owen Bayes, two lines from the bottom. We're still in the middle talking about the Yud Ches Gavur, the 18 Zayas, that's where the Shammai outvoted Basilo. So far we went through 10 of them. We had nine that were listed in the Mishnah that we quoted on Yud Dalet Amud Beis, or Yud Gimel Amud Beis rather, and we started discussing those then. And we had a 10th one yesterday about the case where a person leaves kalim under a drain pipe, and they get full of water, whether that water tassels a mikveh or not, depending on whether he put them there when it was cloudy or he put them there when it wasn't cloudy, etc. Okay. Next, the Gemara says the idach ma'idi. What's another one of the yod chasdaka? So it goes like this: the tnan. We learn in the Mishnah in Masechta Aharos as follows. Now we know there's a concept of tumas oihel when it comes to tumah from a dead body. You have a concept called tumas oihel. And tumas oihel, one way you have it, which is what we're going to be dealing with over here, is where you have an object that one end of it or one part of it is on top, is over a mess, and the other end of it is over another object. So if the object that is bridging the two of them, that's where part of it is over the mess and part of it is over something else, if it's at least a tefach wide, then it for sure brings the tumah from one place to another. That's tumas oihel. Now we're going to deal with what if it's narrower than that.
And that's d'oraisa, right?
The part about that, if it's a tefach wide, it brings the tumah, is d'oraisa, yes. So now we're going to be dealing with a din d'rabbanon related to that. So the Mishnah says, kol metaltlin mevi'in es ha'tumah ba'ovi ha'margeya. All metaltlin, all movable objects, bring tumah from one place to another, even if they're only the thickness of a margeya. A margeya is an ox goad, which is a long stick. It's a long stick, as the Gemara is going to say soon. The diameter of it is one third of a tefach. The circumference, meaning the measurement, if you were to measure around the stick, you took a string, for example, and loop it around the stick, then it'll be a tefach. But the actual thickness of the stick is only a third of a tefach, because that's the proportion. That's the proportion. The diameter of a circle to its circumference is 1 to 3. So even though it's only the width of a margeya, which is one third of a tefach, it still brings the tumah from one place to another. So if one end of it is over a mess and the other end of it is over a person, let's say, then the person is going to be covered. So Amar of Tyson, so Tyson says that can't possibly be right. Akapeach et bonai. Reb Tyson says next question, may I cut off my children? Shezu halacha mekupacha. This is a cut off, meaning a wrong halacha. So Rashi explains that the expression that Tyson is using, it's an expression of tzal. He felt so bad over the fact that Torah is getting forgotten that, as he understood it, this halacha that we just quoted is completely mistaken, is based on mistaken premises. He was so bothered by that that, like he was saying out of tzal, an expression like that, like halavai, kavyachol, like halavai, my children were cut off and passed away. Rashi says. Tosfos says a little bit differently, that Rav Tarfon is saying it as an expression of a shvur. That he's saying, if this halacha is correct, then may I bury my children. But in other words, he's saying, I swear, but effectively he's saying, according to Tosfos, I swear by the lives of my children that this halacha cannot possibly be correct. What happened, says Rav Tarfon, how did this mistake come about? It says, Sheshama Shemei Avatar. Somebody heard what the halacha was in this case, and they misunderstood it. What happened was, somebody came to the Beis Medrash with a shayla, and what happened was, what was the situation? Ha'ikar over, you had a farmer one day walking, and he had his ox goad on his shoulder, because that's usually how people would carry it. Again, it's a long skinny stick with a metal piece at one end, so it would be very common that a person would be walking, as a farmer would be walking and carrying it on, carrying from one end of it is over his shoulder. One end of it, as he is walking, overshadowed a keter, which is where Tumas Oyo would come in. But what happens is, what Tarzan says, it's impossible to say that the person should be Tamei as if he touched a dead body as a result of that, because the margeya is much narrower than a tefach. We said only the circumference of it is a tefach. The diameter is a lot less. And you go by the diameter when it comes to determining whether it's wide enough for being an oichel. What happened, says Reb Tarzan, timu oisim mishum kelim hama hilim ala mes. What happened was, in the Beis Medrash, they said to the person, they said to the farmer, in this case, yes, you're tamei, but not tamei as that you were in, that you were under the same oichel as a mes, and therefore that you're tamei for 7 days and you need part adim of water. You're just tamei too much erich. You're tamei for one day, meaning you have to go to the mikveh and you need a head of shemesh, because you touched a keli which was an oichel over a mes. Now the fact is like this, in other words, your pattern is saying, when it comes to too much oil, for the tumor for the object itself to become tamei, it doesn't matter how wide it is. Even a very narrow, very small item that is and that forms an oichel over a mes is going to become is going or that is in an oichel with a mes is going to become tamei because of it. So the Tyson says, fine, I have no problem with the idea that the goat itself, that the margeya itself, is tamei and needs to be sprinkled with hot adumo water, because it itself, one end of it was over the caver. But you're telling me that the person who was carrying it is also tamei to Mashiva? Says Reb Tarzan, that's got to be a mistake. There's no way. How would the person be tamei when there's not an oichel, a tefach wide, that's covering the where one end of it is over the caver and the other end is over him? So Reb Tarzan says it's impossible. Somebody heard this halacha being passed in the Beis Medrash, and they mistakenly understood that the farmer was not being told that he's tamei for 1 day, but rather that he's being tamei for that he's tamei for 7 days. As if he was under an oil.
One question. The person is carrying the stick, the goad, on his shoulders. Right. So his head is above the stick.
That's neither here nor there. That's neither here nor there. If a person, for example, let's say the stick was a tefach wide. Let's say the stick was a tefach wide. If it was, let's say in a different scenario where he's not carrying it, but let's say for example it was on top of let's say it was on the ground, held up from the ground by some bricks or something, let's say, and he were to stick his finger under it, his whole body would become tamei.
Yeah, but tumas soel, the whole body has to be under an oil, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. No, not at all. As long as some part of the body is under the oil, that's enough to make him tamei. That's exactly the scenario I was just saying. Let's say for example you were to have a table where suppose that one end of it is over a mess and the other end of it is over and a person is sitting at the other end, let's say with his legs under the table, then yes, his whole body is going to become tummy.
So, one second. The oil has to be a tefah thick. But the person
Yeah.
A tefach wide, yes. But the person can stick a tiny little finger and be completely tummy, less than a tefach?
Yeah.
What's the logic here?
The logic is that that's how the Torah says it. Call up ba'el ha'oil, anybody who comes into the oil under which a mess is going to be tummy for 7 days. And that includes whether his whole body is under that oil or whether only part of his body is under that oil. Either way, he's going to be tummy. So the Tarifin is saying, if the ox goad, if the margeya over here is a tefach wide, then of course I have no problem with the person being tamei because some part of his body was under that oil. But I have a problem, the Tarifin says, with saying that he should be tamei for 7 days when the thing is less than a tefach wide. How could that be? It must be. The Tarifin is reconstructing. It must be that they told the person who a person was in such a situation. A farmer was walking along with his ox goad. Then he realized at some point one end of it was over a caver. He went to the Medrash to ask the Shaila. They told him, okay, you're tamei for 1 day because you touched a keli which became tamei nes. In other words, you are a rishon l'truma. And somebody misunderstood, says your parashah, and thought that actually what it is he becomes an avat truma. He's tamei for 7 days. And therefore, they formulated the halacha that was said in that way. But really, your parashah says that for the sake. However, continues the Mishnah, Amar Rav Akiva, Ani Asakin Shiyu Direi Chachamim Kayamim. Rav Akiva says, I will fix things up. I will correct what we said to make what the Chachamim said correct. Meaning, in other words, Rav Akiva is saying that it's true. In some cases, it would be like you're saying, Rav Tarfon, the person is not going to be tamei mes, but there are going to be cases where he is going to be tamei d'rabanan. Namely, like this, Rakita says, she called the Talfon Mavina Satoma al Ha'odam Shenoisa Oisan Ba'ovi Hamardea. We're going to say like this. What the Chachamim meant is that, in fact, for the person who is carrying the Mardea, he is going to be tamei if the Mardea is at least a third of a tefach wide, which is the normal width of a Mardea. Minatora, again, Minatora, nothing's going to happen because it's less than a tefach wide, so nothing's going to happen. Minatora, he's going to be tamei tumas erev. Midrabanan, though, we're going to make it that he is tamei tumas shiva. The reason is, Rabbi Akiva says, because people may confuse the two cases. Because you have, in this particular case, the Mardea is a tefach around, people may confuse that with the case of something which is a tefach across. They're not going to realize that distinction. So therefore, when it comes specifically to the person who's carrying it, we're going to make a zera that he is going to be tamei as if the thing was a tefach wide, because of that possible confusion. And the reason is, Rashi goes on to say, the reason is because given that midaraisa he's tamei on some level, given that midaraisa he's tamei on some level, as we say, he's tamei on the ground that he touched the keli, which touched the mess, what's going to happen is, again, like the original mistake was, people are going to think that he's tamei too much oil, then people are going to make the mistake of thinking that, hey, if you're tamei from an oil, you're only tamei for one day. They're not going to realize that when the oil is wide, when it's wide enough to be considered an oil, that he'll actually be tamei for 7 days, people are going to forget that distinction. Therefore, in this particular case, instead of making him just tamei for 1 day, as we would, d'oraisa, we're going to make him tamei for 7 days as if it was a tefach wide, as you said, Rabbi Akiva. Baal Asman B'chol Shehein, meanwhile, as far as the ox goat itself becoming tamei, that is going to become tamei and need to be sprinkled with hot Abdullah water, regardless how wide it was, because again, one end of it itself was the oil. Baal Shar, what did Rakeva look like? Rakeva says, it is true, when it comes to other people, or other kalim, that are not touching the margeya at all, then they're not touching it, so therefore they don't even have too much eretz. Then fine, we're going to say that it needs to be a tefach wide to make them tamei. So that's what Rabbi Akiva says. In other words, that you're right, Rabbi Tarfon. On a daraisa level, there's no reason why the person who's carrying the margeya should be tamei too much shiva. The most he's only going to be tamei to us erev on the ground they touched a keli, which became tamei nes. However, the Rabbanan, because of that potential confusion where people are going to see that he's tamei, figure, oh, well, then in that case, Tumas oil only lasts for 1 day, and they're not going to realize that Tumas oil, if it's wide enough to be an oil, lasts for 7 days, and they're not going to realize this distinction between how wide the thing is. So therefore, as long as some dimension of it is a tefach, as long as the diameter of it, not the diameter, as long as the circumference of it is a tefach, the measurement around the margeya, then that's going to be enough to be matame him tumas shiva midrabanan, says Rabbi Akiva. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about a different.
Alex, I'm sorry to interrupt you. There's an echo. I'm not sure why.
No idea. Is this any better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. All right. So Tosfos gets into a different discussion about it, that what it is that actually, to a certain extent on a daraisa level, there might even be a case where he's tamei tumas shiva, because you have a concept called tuma b'chiburim, where when a person is still in contact with the source of the tuma, where the person is actually in contact right now with the source of the tumor, where then the tumor is stronger than it would otherwise be. So therefore, Tosfos says that actually, if we're going to say if the stick itself is going to be tumor because of tumas oil, which again it is because one end of it is over the caver, as long as the person is touching it, he is actually going to be tumor for 7 days. However, there's still the Reb Tarfon still figures that what they did is they made the mistake of thinking he's not that he's tamei because of chiburin, but rather that he's tamei because of oil, and therefore that's why the mission was formulated to say that not only he, but everything that's under it becomes tamei, and Rabbi Akiva corrects it and says in that case that It's not that Rav Akiva corrects it and says like this. Look, if there's a case of Tumah b'chiburin, if he's touching the margea with his bare hand, for example, sure, of course he's going to be tamei Tumah Shiva. But even in a case where, let's say, for example, there's a cloth, let's say he's not carrying the margea directly on his shoulder. Let's say, for example, he's carrying it on, he's wearing his clothes. And which are covering his shoulder, and let's say his hand, which is touching the margea also, is wearing a glove or something, then you wouldn't have tumah b'chiburim. Nevertheless, you still have, there could be tumas oil if it's a tefach wide. And again, therefore, as long as it's a third of a tefach wide, then that's enough to be metameh him with tumas oil midrabanan.
Not midaraisa.
But again, right, midaraisa. So again, according to Rashi, midaraisa would be only if the thing is a tefach wide. According to Tosfos, okay, you also have the point where it could be daraisa if he is directly touching the margea with his bare hand or his bare shoulder. But the gzera d'rabbanan is even if he's not touching it with his bare hand or his bare shoulder, and even though the thing is only a third of a tefach wide, nevertheless, we're still going to make him tamei for 7 days and have to be sprinkled with hot agar water. Rav Yanai says, Umar Deya Sha'amu, this ox goad that we're talking about, as we've been saying the whole time, Ein Ba'ovye Tefach, the thickness of it, the diameter of it is not a tefach, it's only a third of a tefach, the Yeshbeh Kefei Tefach, but the circumference of it, the measurement around it, is a full tefach. The Gazra, the Kefei, the Shum Ovye, the Chavim made it Zera, that even if it's only a tefach around, we're going to apply to us oil the same as if it was a tefach across. Because you might confuse the two. And again, according to what Rabbi Akiva is telling us, that would only be for the person who's actually carrying it. Anything else, which is under that margea, and is not, but is not touching it, is indeed not going to be tamei at all. Unless the thing is a tefach wide, of course, and then they become tamei tumas shiva. So the point is, according to Rabbi Akiva, this Mishnah that we just quoted, this gzera, is one of the 18 gzeras. Because that's what Rabbi Akiva is explaining, that we had this Mishnah that said, Kolam is halflin, Ravina, as a term of Ojima Madea. Rabbi Parson said that cannot possibly be right. It must be completely wrong. Rabbi Akiva corrected and explains what the halacha is. And according to Rabbi Akiva, this, that they made this Zera, that he's going to be Tomei, Tomas Shiva, is going to be is Zera Dirabanan, and it's one of the 18 things, says Rabbi Akiva. Okay. So the question now becomes, there's background noise from somebody, if you don't mind moving this up. The question is, okay, but what about, according to Reb Tarfon, who said that the whole thing is based on a mistake, apparently he does not accept Reb Akiva's explanation. So according to him, he continues to insist that the Mishnah is that this is a mistake in halacha. So then according to him, there's no gzera d'rabbanan in this case. So eventually, when we get to the end of the list of 18 and we start counting them up, we're going to have one is going to be missing, because if we're counting this as one of the 18 things, according to Reb Tarfon, it's not there. Everybody agrees that there were 18 gzeiros. So according to Reb Tarfon, what are we filling instead? So Reb Tarfon, the Amak Peyachas B'nishu Azur Alochem Mekupachas, according to Reb Tarfon, who said, may I cut off my children? This is a cut off halacha. Batsru lahu. You're missing one halacha. You're missing one gzeira. Amr of Nachmanides. So the answer is, Reb Nachmanides says, another thing that they made the gzera on that day is one of the yudchas davar, is what we mentioned yesterday, that kusi girls are considered nidos as soon as they're born. We said yesterday because you have either because the fact of the matter is you do have a miut of girls that have a flow even on the day they're born, and therefore we're gozer, and that would make her tamei midaraisa. And the kusim we said don't hold of that. So therefore the chachamim made them all as if they were nidus to be machmir to deal with that minority, or because we said the chachamim didn't want Jews to be intermarrying with the kusim, whatever it is. So Rav Tarfon would say, like we said yesterday when we mentioned the machlokas of Rav Meir and Rav Yossi about the case involving the barrels under the drain pipe, we said that according to Rav Yossi, We said that according to Rav Yossi, we have to add the nos kusim as one of them for the same thing. According to Rav Tyson, we add the nos kusim instead of this one about the margea. Over idos, we were like Rav Meir. As far as the other one, as far as the kalim, we can say that Rav Tyson agrees with Rav Meir that the Shammai, in fact, did outvote the Tilul on that one. Not like Rav Yossi had said, a dying machloikus with Koyman and Medus. Not like Rav Yossi had said that machloikus between the Shammai and the Tilul still persists. So he's still back up to 18 according to Rav Tyson. In other words, so far we have two opinions. We have Rav Yossi and we have Rav Tarfon about one of the 18 Gzeiros being missing. We were saying that instead we're filling it in with the notes called the Lidus Me'aritasam. Okay.
So both say that this one missing is filled by the same one,
right. So Rav Yossi is going to say so in the case of the kalim under the drain pipe, Rav Meir is going to say that is one of the 18 Gzeiros. Rav Yossi is going to say it's not, instead Bnos Kusim is. Now when it comes to our case over here, Rav Akiva is going to say that the one about the Margeya is one of the 18. Rav Tarfon is going to say it's not, and instead I'm filling it in with Nidus Mary Sustam about Bnos Kusim. And as far as the previous one, as far as the barrel that he left under the drain pipe, Rav Tarfon would say, I agree with Rav Meir over there. That is in fact one of the Yud Ches Davar. Tosfos Yeshanim, by the way, points out an interesting detail over here, which is we have a din. There is a din that certain kinds of temporary things are not considered an oihel. If you have, for example, let's say you have somebody jumping. Imagine you have somebody jumping from one place to another. And as he's jumping, let's say he has his legs splayed out. So imagine one leg of his is over a kever. Are you going to say that a keli that he's jumping over is going to become tameh? The halacha is it's not. The difference is, Tosfos Yeshanim says, because over there nothing is touching the ground, whereas over here the farmer, his feet were in fact touching the ground while he was walking over there with the margeya. Therefore, there's more reason to say that should be considered an oihel. That little point over there comes up in a number of discussions in halacha as far as the dinim of a kohen driving around in a car or flying in a plane over kvarim. Do we say that he's in a keli, which is covering over a mess, and therefore that he's going to be tamei, and therefore that you have a problem, or do we say that not? So that particular detail of what Tosfos Yeshanim is one of the things that factors into that.
So what are we saying? An oil has or has not touched the ground?
No, what we're saying is, if you have an oihel which is temporary and it's completely not touching the ground, another example gives in a Mishnah in Arlos, let's say, for example, you have a sheet flying in the wind, or let's say you have a bird flying. Imagine, for example, you have, you know, somebody hung out their laundry to dry, and one of the sheets, let's say, took off and started floating off into the air. So imagine you have one end of the sheet happens to be over a caver, and the other end happens to be over a person. At some particular fraction of a second, we won't say the person is going to be tummy from that. But that's because that thing, you have no oil that's even touching the ground, and the thing itself is very temporary because the sheet is constantly moving in the wind. But over here, when you have a farmer walking along carrying a margea, it's true, it's also a very temporary thing because he's moving the whole time, but the fact that his feet are on the ground, the fact that he's walking on the ground, gives it a little bit more permanence, and therefore makes it be considered an oil.
What about a parachute? You drop in a parachute over a kever. You're telling me or not?
Well, if you yourself are over the kever, then you tell me regardless, because tumah b'kas v'olam, because the tumah goes upward. Rather, the question would be, if one part of the parachute is over the kever and you are not, you happen to be a couple of feet away, the pashtus would be the same kind of thing. I suppose it would be the same kind of thing. Like the power of enough kever, that he wouldn't be tumah. I'm not sure about that, though.
What would a parachute be different than a plane? Parachutes are the plane, the same thing. You're not touching the floor.
Well, that's the point. But on the other hand...
There's a lot of background noise. Okay.
Sure. I don't know why. That's true, Ellie. On the other hand, the truth of the matter is with the plane, it's not so simple either, because even though the plane is not touching the ground, there is, on the other hand, something... Well, so what it is like this. When a kohen is in a plane, for example, the problem is, do we count... There it's a different thing. You're asking that the plane should be blocking the tumah from getting to him, because otherwise, at some point, he may be directly over a kever. So you're asking for the plane to be blocking him from the tumah, and that's a little bit different, because that's something called oihel zoruk. That's called a thrown oihel, and not necessarily does it count as an oihel. So you would say, in effect, that there comes some point when he is, when his body is directly over a kever, without, in effect, without anything in between, because the plane won't count. Here we're talking about the other way around. You're asking whether the plane, or the parachute or whatever is going to bring the tumah to him. In other words, hypothetically, let's say, as we said, with the parachute or with the plane, let's say he himself at no time happens to be over the caver, but let's say one end of the parachute or one end of the plane or whatever is over a caver, will it transmit tumah to him based on what we're saying over here? It may not, because it's an oil that's just flying around in the air, and that wouldn't be considered, and that wouldn't truly be considered an oil. That's the difference. But again, when it comes to a kohen driving in a car, then you have another consideration, because again, the car's wheels are touching the ground. So then it's similar to what Tosfos Hashanim is saying over here about where the farmer is walking by with his ox goad on his shoulder, where again, even though it's a very temporary thing, he's constantly moving, but his feet are touching the ground, and therefore that makes it more of an oil. So for a kohen to drive over a car over kvarim is a little bit more of a problem. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. The Idach, the Gemara says, okay, what's the next one of the Yud Ches Davar? So far we're up to 12. So far we're up to 11. So like this. You have a Mishnah that says like this. Actually, a Braita. If a person harvests grapes for the purpose of pressing them in a press to make wine out of them. Shammai and Mahuksha, Hillel and Maloy Huksha. So you have Machloikas, Shammai and Hillel, whether it becomes Muksha the Kabbal Tumor or not. According to Rashi, Rashi doesn't spell out in so many words, but it seems from what Rashi says, we mentioned this concept earlier on that just above briefly, and Rashi over there seems to say that what we would say is, if we know that juice actually came out of the grapes at some point, then we're going to say that the grapes are Muksha the Kabbal Tumor, even though, as we're going to discuss now, not necessarily did he want that juice to come out. Nevertheless, Shammai is going to say the fact that juice came out is enough to be Machshel on the Kabbal Tumah, whereas Hillel would say that not unless he actually wanted the juice to come out.
So for Shammai never has an intent when it comes to Tumah?
Not never. In this particular case, for reasons that we're going to discuss soon, he says that the Hechcher does not require Machshava. Normally, of course, Shammai is going to require Machshava for Hechcher just like anything else. But in this particular case, as we're going to see, Shammai finds a reason to say that it shouldn't apply when it comes to grapes specifically, whereas Hillel disagrees with that. According to the Rambam, it's even more so. According to the Rambam, Shammai would say, even if we don't know at all that any juice came out of the grapes, nevertheless, we're still going to consider them being Moksha the Kabbal Tumah. So, the Braita continues, Omele Hillel L'Shammai, so Hillel asked Shammai, Mipnei Ma Boitzrin B'Tara Ve'in Moskin B'Tara, why indeed do we have to, according to you, we have to harvest grapes in a state of Tara, if you want the grapes and the juice that's made from them to be Tahir, you're saying that as soon as the grapes are harvested, they're Moksha the Kabbal Tumah, therefore if the person who's harvesting them is Tameh, or the Kalim that you're putting them into are Tameh, then they're going to become Tomei. Why you're doing that only with grapes and not the in moskin batara, but you're not doing that when it comes to olives. In Lashon Kodesh, there's a different word for the harvest of different kinds of fruits. The harvest of grapes is called betzira. The harvest of olives is called mesika. So Hillel was asking Shammai, why are you saying this concept only when it comes to grapes, not when it comes to olives? I mean, olives have olive oil. It's also one of the shivamashkin. Shouldn't you say the same thing, that the as long as any oil came out of them, or maybe even if it didn't come out, they should be moksha l'kabbal tumah? Amalei, so Shammai answers him, im taknitemi, if you provoke me, gozrani tumah afal mesika, then yes, I will actually say that we should make a gzera for the same thing about harvesting olives as well. Now, what kind of an expression is that? If you provoke me, I mean, halacha doesn't get determined based on who provokes who. So Reb Shuda Goren explains in Reb Shuda Goren explains in a truva of his, and also Ben Yehoyada says something similar. What it is like this: Shammai knows that there's a reason, which we're going to explain in a second, why there should be a difference between grapes and olives, but Hillel was trying to argue with Shammai, and every time Shammai brings a reason to distinguish between one and the other, Hillel shoots down that reason. So therefore, Shammai is saying, look, pillow, according to you, apparently there's no difference between grapes and olives. I hold that for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss soon, that there's a reason to make the Zera on grapes, that we have to harvest them the Tahara, because as soon as they're harvested, they're going to be considered Moksha L'Kabal Tumah. But if you are not seeing a distinction between grapes and olives, and you're going to insist that there's no distinction, now you want to argue that there's no distinction between them L'Kula, and you shouldn't have this Zera by either one of them. Me, says Shammai, I hold we have to have this Zera by grapes, as we're going to discuss soon why. Therefore, if you, Hillel, are going to say that there's no distinction, then we're going to have no choice. We're going to have to say that we're going to have to be Machmir by both of them, and say that the same din would apply to both of them. Now, why indeed should there be a distinction? So Tosfos mentions, because when it comes to grapes, as soon as the grapes are ripe, anything that comes out of them is grape juice, is one of the Sheva Mashkim. As opposed to with olives, usually you have the juice that comes out of them at the beginning is not actual oil. It's a fat called, in Hebrew it's called moichel. We have, for example, in Perek Yeshmal and Samitza, one of the prakim over there that you learn for a yard site during the 11 months, you have over there nokel especially yain and moichel. You have moichel mentioned a couple of times, which is moichel is fat from olives, so it's more watery. It's not oily like the actual olive oil itself. It's more watery, and that is usually what comes out at the beginning from olives, and that's not considered a mashke. Only after the olives are sat for a couple of days, only then is the moichel thick enough to be considered oil. So the Tosfos discusses for that and for all the other reasons that we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara why we have this zera on grapes. Those reasons don't apply to olives. But again, the idea is Hillel did not accept or did not understand that distinction. He held that there should be no difference. If we're going to say that the din doesn't apply to olives, then there's no reason it should apply to grapes as well. And Shammai says exactly the opposite. Hillel, if you're going to keep on nudging and keep on insisting that there's no difference, then I'm going to say, okay, but there's no difference, but it's going to be l'chumra that there's no difference. That the same din is going to apply to both of them. So the Mishnah, the Braisa continues, not to care of the Beit HaMedrash. They stuck a sword into the ground in the Beit HaMedrash. That was their signal whenever they had, like now there's going to be a critical discussion, a critical vote in Halacha. We want everybody here. The sword was as a signal, like everybody who is supposed to be here had better be here, otherwise they're going to be struck with a sword. Amru, they said, Hanichnasi konis v'hayosei al yosei. Anybody who wants to come into the Beis Medrash at this point, come on in so that they can help in discussing this halakha. Anybody who wants to go out should not go out, because we need everybody here in order to vote on this halakha. And, continues the Braisa, v'oisei ayoim hoya hilo kofuk v'yoshev v'tnei shamai ke'echa min atamidim. On that day, Hilo was bent over and subjugated in front of Shammai like one of the Talmidim. Now, normally, Hillel was the Nasi, Shammai was the Avestin. Usually, the Nasi outranks the Avestin. But in this particular case, now what happened was, as a result of this discussion, Hillel ended up being subjugated to Shammai. It was as difficult a time for the Jewish people as the day that the Eagle was made. Now, what's going on over here? So again, Rav Shmuel explains in his Tshuva over there that what happened is when you had all the Talmidim coming in now, then a large number of them went over, for this purpose at least, to Shammai's side, and they were like surrounding Hillel and nudging him and bothering him to change his mind and vote with them, and therefore like Hillel ended up in a subservient position to Shammai. So why, and we're saying it was as bad as the day that was made, that when the eagle was made, the various Mephoshim talk about the idea that, in other words, the same way as, like, for example, Sam Sofer says, the same way as what happened by the eagle is that they disobeyed Aaron. Aaron was trying to get them to slow down and not make the eagle so fast and so forth, but they were in such a rush that, like, they jumped in and overruled him. So that's how it was over here, when they're jumping in and, like, overruling Hillel and not paying sufficient attention to his opinion in halacha and deciding like Shammai. So in that sense, it was like the day the Eagle was made, because they did the same kind of thing where they're jumping ahead and doing what they feel is right to them, rather than checking into whether it is in fact the right thing to do. There is actually a sticha in Chelet Chavdalad where the Rebbe talks about, we know there's two things in Jewish history about which it says that they were as bad as the day the Eagle was made. One is the day when they first translated the Torah into Greek, and the other one is our story over here. So why are those both compared to the day the Eagle was made? The gist of the explanation, the Rebbe explains the sticha for Dvarim in Chelet Chavdalad, the gist of the explanation is that with the Eagle, there was the making of it, which was bad enough in itself, and then more to the point, though, there was the after effects that happened. Remember, they made the Eagle one day, and only the next day did they start worshiping it, and the luchos were broken. So like you have, something bad happened one day, something negative happened one day, but it wasn't even so much the fact that that happened, it was what was going to continue, what was going to come further, what was going to happen further as a result of it. And the same thing over here. You have when the Torah was translated into Greek, you had that created the possibility that now the Goyim are going to take over the Torah and misunderstand it, as in fact, in many, many times in history they did. Even to this day, they kind of do. And you have, as far as this thing with Hillel and Shammai, it created the possibility where now we're going to say more generally that the halacha is like Shammai against Hillel, and we don't want that. We have, it's true, Shammai is very great Talmud Chacham, of course, and his opinion deserves a lot of respect. But we know that in general, this Shammai been praying this Hillel in a Mishnah. Eventually, there was even a Bas Kol to that effect, that the halacha is usually like this Hillel. So this, that there became a possibility on that day that they could start having where the halacha is more regularly going to be like this Shammai, was something that the Chachamim were very worried about. And for that reason, we're comparing it to the making of the Eagle, where the making itself was not necessarily yet such a negative thing, but rather the potential that could come out of it afterwards. In this particular case, the Rebbe says the negative potential didn't really come out. The fact of the matter is, except for these 18 things, and except for a couple of other rare exceptions, the halacha generally is like this Hillel. But nevertheless, they were worried about it because of the potential that could come out of it. It also talks about the idea that Rebbe mentions in the Sikh over there, it's brought in various other places as well, that we know Hillel represents Chesed, Shammai represents Gvura, so the idea that we should have that Gvura should be predominating in the world is something that worried the Chachamim very much. And in the end, we have the Halacha, usually it's like this Hillel, towards the side of Chesed. There's a minor in the Chotah Torah, in fact, where the Alter Rebbe says that was kind of Korach's mistake also. Korach was a Levi. The Levium represent Gvura, as opposed to the Korinim represents Chesed. Korach wanted that Gvura should predominate in the world. Therefore, he wanted the Levium to be higher than the Korinim. And he's correct to a certain extent. Well, Osir Lava, it will be that way. In Perek Nun of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about the idea that the Avodah of Gvura, in a way, is much greater than the Avodah of Chesed. And with Osir Lava, we will actually see that. But nowadays, we don't live in that world yet. We live in a world where Chesed has to predominate, and therefore, the idea that Gvura, the idea that Korach's Gvura, or Shammai's Gvura, should be stronger, was a very, very harsh, and was a very harsh thing. There is, by the way, actually very interesting, there's a simon in Shulchan Aruch Erech Chaim that lists a number of days in Jewish history when certain tragedies happen, where Yechidim, certain Talmid Chachamim, certain rare Talmid Chachamim, have the minute to fast on those days. One of those days is the day that Shammai and Hillel had their Machlokes, which could mean the story over here. It could mean the story that we said before when they gathered together for the Yud Chas Davar. Whatever it is, it says over there it was the 9th of Adar, and Yechidis go to fast on that day because of the fact that Shammai and Hillel had their Machlokes, that day Shammai and Hillel had their Machlokes thing. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The Gozer Shammai and Hillel were Kibbutz Minayim. So at that point, what happened was that Hillel ended up agreeing with Shammai. So we mentioned this before on Daf Tesvav when we talked about a couple of days ago that there were only three places where Shammai and Hillel had a machlokes. And we said, but what about we have the case of Smicha? We said that they had the same machlokes in previous generations also. And we said, what about this one as far as the grapes? We said Hillel ended up conceding to Shammai. So we don't count it as one of the three machlokes in Hillel and Shammai, because unlike in those where Hillel continued to maintain his opinion and Shammai his until the Chacham outvoted both of them, here Hillel ended up agreeing with Shammai. But the Gozer, Shammai and Hillel, were Kiblu Minayim. What ended up happening was Shammai and Hillel both agreed, okay, we have to make this Zera about the grapes, that they're the Moksha L'Kabel Truma, but the people did not accept that from them. They did not accept that Zera. But also, tell me, Gozer, Kiblu Minayim. later on, in a later generation, when it came to the Yitzchak Dover, Shammai and Hillel summoned him again, voted on this, and again, Shammai outvoted Beit Hillel, and they decided to make this Gzeira, and this time the people accepted it. So therefore, it's counted as one of the Yitzchak Dover. Okay, my timer. So why indeed are we saying when it comes to grapes that you have to harvest them b'tahara, that they become mukshal l'kabel toma even though you didn't intend for them to get wet? So we have a few reasons. Almost the eerie Amar of Chanina, Gzeira Shemi Yitzirenu B'Kubas Tmeyas. We make Gzeira because you might actually harvest them into baskets that are Tomei. So now what happens is when the Keli is Tomei and the grapes which have juice coming out of them, because when you're harvesting them, a little bit of juice tends to come out of them, normally we would say, fine, you didn't want that juice to come out. It's not Machshel L'Kabel Tumah, but we have a concept when the juice becomes Tomei, that it's called Tum'ose V'Hachshere Boin Ka'achat. At the same moment, the juice is becoming Tomei, and it itself, being a liquid, is able to become Tomei, then therefore it's Metamei the things that, the things, the grapes that are touching it. So therefore, because of that, we make a Gzeira, that they therefore make a Gzeira to prevent him from doing that. They have to begin with do it with Tahor baskets, and the people themselves have to be Tahor. So the question, as the Gemara says, not everybody agrees to that concept. That works out according to the opinion that says that yes, that a Keli that's Tomei makes the liquids that are in it important and makes them be considered a liquid to be Machshel L'Kabel Tumah, even if otherwise they wouldn't have been, even if otherwise you didn't have in mind that you want that liquid to be on these grapes. So if you say that, because it's a Keli that's Tomei, then therefore it causes that, Shaper, well then good, we understand why there's a need for the Gzeira. But according to the opinion that says that even if the keli is tomei, we still have to look whether the mashkin themselves are choshuv, and in this case they're not, because we don't assume that the person cares about the little tiny bit of juice that comes out of the grapes when he's picking them. So even the fact that they go into a tomei keli is not enough to make them be considered a mashka. But then what are you going to say? If you go according to that opinion, fine, the juice itself maybe is going to be Tomei, but it's not going to be Matame. It's not going to be Matame the grapes, because the grapes themselves are not Mokshel L'Kabel Tumah yet, because you didn't have juice that came on them where you wanted it to be there. So no, that doesn't work. Ela Omer Ze'iri, Omer Apanina, Gzeira Shem Yitzirenu B'Kupas Muzu Pofer. No, the Gzeira is rather because you might harvest the grapes into baskets that are lined with tar. Now, normal baskets that you pick grapes that you put in. Whoever is that near, if you don't mind muting yourself, sorry. So the Gzeira is not because the baskets might be Tomei. You're right. If the baskets are Tomei, they don't necessarily make the liquid be considered any more important than otherwise. But we have to make a Gzeira because the baskets might be that you might use baskets that are lined with tar. Now tar is waterproof. If you use baskets like that to harvest your grapes into, then you, by doing that, you're demonstrating that you care about every drop of liquid. You don't want it to go to waste, even the little bit of liquid that comes out of them when you're picking them. So because of that, because of that, and if that were to happen, if you use baskets that are lined with tar, then indeed the juice in them is machshu, the grapes, to be mekabel tumah, because then you show that you obviously want that juice to be there, because you want it to be preserved. That's why you're using baskets that are lined with tar. So because of that, the Chachamim made a Gzeira, Shammai made a Gzeira, and we said that Hillel accepted it, and later on they were talking, and we made this Gzeira, that we're going to always consider the grapes Mokshel L'Kabel Tumah, even if you didn't use baskets that are lined with tar. Rava Omer Gzeira M'Shaman Noshtes. Rava says another reason the Gzeira is because of grapes that bite into each other. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, sometimes you have, when you're picking grapes, you have grapes that are tightly clustered together, so you have to separate them, because you want to pick the individual grapes. So what happens is, when you're separating one grape from another, then sometimes a little juice squeezes out. Now that's something you're doing via dyeing, because you're taking with your hands and separating those grapes one from another, therefore it's considered more of a maisa, and therefore that's reason
therefore that's reason to make the grapes be considered mokshel lekabel tumah. Rabbi Hanan explains differently. He says nershchin means literally biting. It means sometimes you have a person bites into the grapes. So they start eating grapes off the vine, and then you have some juice squirts out and gets onto the other grapes. Now, by the way, as long as the other grapes are attached to the ground, they're not going to be mokshel lekabel tumah, because nothing can become mokshel lekabel tumah while it's still attached to the ground. But the concern is, as in the next one that we're going to say in the Gemara, that the juice may still be on them when they're harvested. You might have, again, according to Rashi, we're talking about after time of harvest, because you're separating one grape from another. According to Rabbeinu Hanan, you might have that somebody went and ate from the grapes and bit into them very shortly before the harvest, which could even be during the time of the harvest. We know the halacha is that when you have a worker who's hired to work in your field, you have to let him eat on the job. He has to be able to, the Torah tells us, you have to allow him to eat from whatever kind of produce he's working with. So if he's picking grapes, then he's going to be entitled to eat some grapes as he's eating, and he may eat them directly off the vine and then squirt some juice onto the other grapes. Rav Nachman doesn't go in here because the Gemara is going to give a separate reason. Rav Nachman Amar Rav Baruch, another reason why we would say this Gzeira by grace. For Amim Sha'adim Hoylech L'Kaimai, sometimes you have a person goes to his vineyard, Leida Imigiu Anavim L'Btsirai Eloi, he wants to check whether the grapes are ready to be harvested or not. The Notel Eshkel Anavim L'Sosai, so he takes a cluster of grapes to squeeze it to see is the juice that we're getting out of it, does it taste like grape juice should, and then in that case it's time to pick the grapes. Umazala fagabi anovim, and that juice squirts onto the other grapes. Over shas b'tzira adayin mashka tefeach aleihem. Now when he comes very shortly afterwards to do the harvesting, there's still liquid on those grapes, and therefore they're mokshel lekabel tumah. So for one or another of these reasons, or maybe all of these reasons, Shammai figured that you need to make a gzeira that whenever a person is harvesting grapes, even if we don't know, even if it's just like Rashi says that some juice squirted out on them, but we don't have any reason to know that it was berasa, or according to the Rambam, even if we don't know any juice squirted on them, but for one or another of these reasons, we have to figure that it may have, and that we should be and that we should say it's mokshel lekabel tumah, the Rambam. So again, so it says none of these reasons apply to olives, because the juice that comes out of olives to begin with is not actual oil, it's only moichel or moichel. And you also have this thing over here about where they're tightly together and you have to separate them doesn't really apply to olives either, nor does Rabbeinu Hananel's reason, by the way, about eating them off the tree, because in fact olives, you know, fresh olives are fairly bitter. You're not just going to eat them directly off the tree. And the one about checking to see whether they're ready. Again, if they're ready, even if they're ready, all that's going to be coming out of them is moichel, and therefore, and that's not going to be mokshel lekabel tumah. So for all those reasons, Shammai was saying there has to be a distinction between grapes and olives, whereas Hillel didn't want to accept that distinction. And again, we said Hillel ended up being overruled. By the way, Tosfos Yeshanim points out over here the different reasons that we're giving over here. It's also going to depend on them whether we say that this concept applies only if he's harvesting grapes to make wine out of them versus if he's harvesting them to make raisins or to eat them fresh or whatever. The first reason that we mentioned that they might be in tomei baskets would mean, according to that, it would mean regardless for whatever purpose you're harvesting the grapes, because once you put them in tomei baskets, then the juice on them is going to be kosher. According to all the other reasons about baskets lined with tar, or about a person checking whether they're ready to be harvested or not, those would only apply if you're harvesting grapes in order to make wine out of them. Those considerations wouldn't really apply if you're just harvesting the grapes in order to eat them or to make raisins out of them. Which is why the expression was if you're harvesting grapes in order to press them in the grape press. Okay. So anyway, so that's number 12 out of the 18. The Idah. Next, let's get to number 13. What is the 13th of the 18 letters? Amar Tavi Rishba Amar Shmuel. Tavi Rishba says the name of Shmuel. Rashi explains. That Rishba comes from a word that means a net. So this was a person who worked for a living setting out nets to trap animals and birds and whatever. There's a different explanation that Rishonim give, that Rishpo is Moloshin Rish based of. It means the head of his father's father's household. So in other words, the point of that, he would be some very important person, somebody who had a very prominent position in his family, or maybe he might have been a Kohen, he was the head of his based of his Kohenim. Anyway, Omer Shmuel, so Tavi Rishpo says in the name of Shmuel, Taf Yidule Truma Truma Bebeyim Gozu. Here is the 13th one. The Chachamim made a Gzeira, that if you take Truma and plant it, that what grows from it is also considered Truma. So Midaraisa, you would have, if you were to take Truma and plant it, nothing happens. The whatever grows from it is considered Chulin. You have to take Truma and Maisa from it like usual, but it has no special status. But this that we say, we have a concept in other places in Shas, that if a person plants Truma, Midrabanan, what grows from it is considered Truma, that would be the 13th of the 18 days. So after the Truma, Boba Yen Gozer was also the Gozer on that day together with the other 18 days. My Tana, why did they make that Gzera? So Rav Chanina says the reason is because you may have a Yisrael who gave Truma from his crop, but he doesn't feel like giving it to the Kohen. He's cheap. He doesn't want to give it to the Kohen. So he figures, okay, you know what? I have this Truma. What am I going to do with it? I myself can't eat it. I'm a Zor. I don't feel like giving it to the Kohen. I'll plant it. So in order to avoid that, the Chachamim said, he's not going to gain anything from it. Whatever grows from it is also going to be Truma, and he's still going to have to give it to the Kohen. The problem with that is, Amar Rava, Ida Hashidi Lahachi, Rava says the problem with that is, if you're going to say that a person is suspect, that Yisrael is suspect of taking Truma and not giving it to the Kohen, Afrushi Nami Lo Lifrushu, then such a person, to begin with, would not separate out the full amount of Truma. Ella Omar Rabbi Yisrael, Marshal takes it out because it's all part of the argument. Because given the Efshel Mebet Chita Achas to the Shmuel, because after all, we know that Shmuel says in a few places in Shas that a person can be Yotze Truma on Daraisa level by giving even one grain of wheat. The Daraisa, there's no fixed amount for Truma. You give even one grain is enough to be considered Truma on a Daraisa level. And you have the 140th or 150th or 160th that you're supposed to give. So if we're talking about a Yisrael who's suspect of not giving the Truma to the Kohen, then why to begin with would he separate the amount that, the Chachamim are requiring him to, the 140th or 50th or whatever? Instead, he would just cheat out by giving one grain, and that he wouldn't mind giving to the Kohen. The loika of it, the fact is he didn't do that, the fact is he separated out the proper amount of Truma. So therefore, him muni mehenni. Obviously, therefore, he must be trustworthy. It must be that he separated out the amount of Truma, we're going to assume that means that he actually intends to give it to the Kohen. There'd be no reason for him to follow the Chumrah, to follow the Takana of the Chachamim, to take out more than what he needs to Daraisa, and then be cheap and not give it to the Kohen. We can't assume that's going to be the case. So therefore, the Stamah, he's going to give it to the Kohen. So we have no reason to make a Gzeira to prevent him from using it, to say that he might go and plant the Truma in order to avoid giving it to the Kohen. If he was going to do that, he would have separated out one grain of wheat in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. But no. No, it is true, it is a Gzeira, this that if you plant Truma, it becomes Truma, but it's not because of the problem with the Yisrael, Gzeira b'shem Truma Tmeya b'yad Koyen. It's rather a Gzeira because when you have a Koyen who has Truma, which is Tomei, now, Truma, which is Tomei, is not allowed to eat. So the usual way of disposing of Truma that's Tomei would be to burn it. So he doesn't want to do that, let's say. He wants to plant it instead. He wants to keep it around until planting season and then plant it. But the problem is Duma Mashi Logabe, he may keep it by him for a long time until planting season, and then he's gonna plant it. But also Lidia Takola, meanwhile there's the problem that he may mistakenly eat it, and then he's eating Truma Tmeya where he's gonna be high at Misabidishima him. So therefore, we make a Gzeira that no, if he plants Truma and we make this Gzeira, whether the Truma is Tomei or Tahor, either way, we're going to say whatever grows from it is considered Truma, and therefore he's not gaining anything from planting it.
So the Kohen is more chashud than the Israel Amaretz.
Well, so it's not so much that, well, yes and no. I mean, what we're saying is if the Yisrael was choshered to not give Terumah to the Kohen, then we wouldn't have expected him to separate out the proper amount of Terumah in the first place. The fact that he separated out the proper amount of Terumah shows that he intends to give it to the Kohen. But with the Kohen himself, you have a problem. If Terumah is Tomei, he may keep it around to plant it, and we don't want him to do that. We don't want him to do that, and therefore we tell him that whatever grows from it is going to be Terumah, and therefore he's not really gaining anything. So now we're up to 13. Now we're up to 13 of the 18 of the 18 days. Next, the Idach. What's the next one? Here's another one which we're going to talk about in more detail at the end of the Masechta and the last Perek. You have a din over there that if a person is traveling before Shabbos, he didn't have a chance to get home before Shabbos, and he has his money bag with him. So we said over there that he can give it to a goy. Now, there's two alternatives. Well, there's three alternatives. What a person is going to do in that situation. He's traveling on Shabbos. He's still on the road. He has his money bag with him. There's three possibilities what he could do to avoid being mechal Shabbos. One is he could just leave it there. However, the Chachamim knew, the Gemara is going to mention in the last paragraph, that a normal person is not going to be capable of doing that. A normal person is, we don't expect he's going to be able to just put his money bag on the side and say, I'm going to leave and I'm going to lose all my money because of Shabbos. What's going to happen? The person is more likely then to be Mechalel Shabbos and actually carry it home. We don't want that. So therefore, instead, there are two ways to do it to mitigate the Chilul Shabbos. One is what we're going to allow him to carry it less than 4 amos at a time. The other way is that we're going to allow him to tell a goy to carry it. Now, the problem with him carrying it less than 4 amos is it's very easy to forget and one time walk more than 4 amos. So therefore, there's more of a chance of Chilul Shabbos with that. So to avoid that, the Chachamim allowed that in a unique case like that, in an emergency case like that, we're going to override the din of not telling a goy to do things for you on Shabbos, the usual rule of Amir al-Akum, and we're going to allow you to tell a goy to carry it for you. So this din that if it got dark for a person when he was on the road, that he's allowed to give his purse, his money bag, to a goy to carry home for him rather than carrying less than 4 amos, boy by young goes, that's another one of the things that they would go there on that day together with the Yud Ches Davar. Up until that point, the din would have been that you could have carried it less than 4 amos at a time, but the Chachamim said, we don't want you to do that because you may forget and one time carry it 4 amos or more in Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, instead, we're saying, give it to a goy. And in the last Perek, Be'ez Hashem, and in Perek Chav Dalet of Amos Echta, we'll talk about more details over there. What do you do if you don't have a goy with you, etc. Okay. Next, the Idach. Now we're up to number 15. What is it? Omer Bali Omer Avimi San Vasa. Bali, that was his name, says the name of Avimi from San Vasa, which is the name of a place. Another one of the Yud Ches Davar is Pitan, this that you're not allowed to eat past Akum, the Shamnon, and that you're not allowed to use olive oil that was made by Goyim, where that one doesn't apply anymore because the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us in Masechta Avodah Zarah that eventually Rabbi Yehuda Nissiya and his Beis Din were mevatel the Gzeiran oil because it never was widespread among the Jewish people. But the, other than that, the bread and the oil, the yenon and the wine of goyim, stam yenon, uvnei sehen, and something involving their daughters, meaning not marrying them, that's also daraisa, but to be in yichud with them, all of those, kulam miyuchas davarhein, all of that is one zera out of the 18 zeras. So far we're going to list the rest of them. There are actually Rishonim who learn differently than Rashi. Rashi says over here that what we mean is all of these things count as one Zera, because as the Gemara is going to say soon, each of them was meant to prevent the person from doing the next one on the list. So therefore, they all count as one big Zera. So according to Rashi, we still have a few more to list in the Gemara. You have other Rishonim who learn that actually at this point, the Gemara has finished off listing the 18 because it counts each one of these as separate. Pitan counts as one, Shamnon counts as one, Yenon counts as one, etc. Okay. So the Gemara asked, Panichal of Meir, so far we're good according to the Meir, because we had yesterday on Daf Tzayin, we had the case over there with the person forgetting the Kalim under the drain pipe, where we said Rav Meir counts that as one of the Yud Ches Davar, but we said Rav Yossi doesn't. So according to the Meir, good, then we're getting to 18 now. Because so far, So far what we have is 9 that were listed in the Mishnah and Zavim that we began with, the 9 things that passed Truma. We had in a previous Mishnah, we had that you're not allowed to read by the light of a lamp on Shabbos, is number 10, that you're not allowed to pick out lights from clothes on Shabbos by the light of a lamp. So now you're up to 11. Then you have, according to the mayor, the one with the drain pipe is 12, the one with the ox goad with the stick is 13, Benois Kusim is 14, the one with the grapes is 15, Gedula Truma is 16, the one where you give your money bag to the goy when Shabbos is coming is 17, and this one about the oil and wine and so forth is number 18. El Rav Yossi shivs today, Havyan, but according to Rav Yossi, who says that the Shammai and the Tillel are still continuing to argue afterwards about the case with the Kaili under the drain pipe, shivs today, Havyan. So according to Rav Yossi, you only have 17. So what is he adding? The answer is, in that case, according to Rav Yossi, you add something that Rav Acha Ba'adah says. The Amr Rav Acha Ba'adah, Amr Rav Yitzchak. First of all, let's talk about these gzeiras that we just said. They made a gzeira on bread of goyim, oil of goyim, and so forth. So let's analyze that one a little bit. And afterwards, we'll mention another gzeira that Chacham made at that time. Gozru al pita mishum shamon. The Chacham made a gzeira about that you're not allowed to eat bread baked by goyim. And that, by the way, that applies to bread that was baked by a private goy. You have poskim who hold that bread that was baked by a commercial goyish baker is mutter, of course, as long as it doesn't have any non-kosher ingredients in it, and you have people in the world who are soymech hanan and eat pasak. Although it says in Shulchan Aruch, at least during Aseret Yemei, you should be more careful and only eat pasak. Anyway, so they made a gzera about bread of goyim, mishrum shamnon, because eating their bread may lead to drinking, to using their oil. And then he continues, they made a gzera about not using their oil because it may lead to drinking their wine. So the Gemara interjects, wait a minute. Well, al pita mishum shamnan, what do you mean they made a gzera of bread because of oil? My umid is shemen mitas. Why is oil stronger than bread that we need a gzera to prevent people from using oil? Neither oil nor bread of goyim is the kind of thing where if you use it, you're likely to become that socially close with the goy. Wine is different. So why do we need two separate things from that, wine and bread? Ella, you're right. Gozru al pitan vishamnan mishum yenam. You're right. What we mean is like this. The Chachamim made a gzera. Don't eat bread baked by goyim, and don't use olive oil pressed by goyim. Both of those, because if you do that, you're likely to come to drinking their wine. And wine is much more of a social thing. People drink wine together, and it lowers their inhibitions, and it makes them much more likely to do things that they wouldn't do. So they made a gzera. Don't drink wine of goyim, because it may lead you to be too socially close with them. In turn, then, the Chachamim made that gzera on wine, because it may lead you to get involved with goyish women, to marry them, which would be also daraisa, or to be in yichud with them, whatever. And the Chachamim made a gzera, don't be involved with goyish women, even, for example, as far as yichud, where it's not also daraisa. Don't do that, mishum davar achar, because of davar achar, because of avodah zarah. If a Jew gets involved with a goyish woman, for example, being alone with her, let alone having relations with her, it may lead him to avodah zarah, as in fact we find with the story of Benois Midian over there by Shittim, where exactly that. Yainam wasn't also at that point. So what did the girls do? They convinced the Jews to come in and drink wine with them and get friendly with them and so forth, and eventually they were mezameh together. So all of that is considered one big zera, according to Rashi, that we have each of those things leads one to another. Bread and oil can lead to wine. Wine can lead to getting involved with goyish women, and goyish women can cause a person to be involved with avodah zarah. So all of that is one. And then, the last one, they also made a gzera about something else because of something else that it could lead to. Now, when they first said that, then it was clear what they meant, but we need to have that explained to us. So my davar acher, what is that davar acher that the Chachamim made a gzera on, which we haven't mentioned so far? The Chachamim made a gzera that a goyish boy is considered to be tamei as a zav. Now, you actually have two stages in this. You have, if midaraisa, we actually have three stages in it. Midaraisa, goy becomes a zav, nothing happens. The whole concept of tumah, of a living person, only applies to Jews. There was an early gzeira d'rabbanan that if a goy actually becomes a zav, actually has an emission of ziva, that he's tumah d'rabbanan. Now, on top of that, Chachamim made a further gzeira that any goyish boy or man is considered to be a zav on a d'rabbanan level, whether he actually ever was a zav or not. And the reason that's the davar acher, and the reason why we're preventing that is because of another davar acher, shelo yehei kinnik yisrael rogel etzla the mishkav zacher. Because you don't want that a Jewish boy is going to like hanging around with a goyish boy, and they're going to come to mishkav zacher, which was and still is to a certain extent very common among goyim. So for that reason, so the Chachamim knew, if we say that goy is considered tameh, Jews in those days were generally careful about, many Jews were careful about tumah v'tahara. So therefore, by saying that the goyish boy or man is always going to be considered a zav, that will prevent, even if you had a Jew was going to be tempted to indulge in mishkav zachar with him, the fact that he's going to become tameh would prevent him from doing so. It would be a barrier he wouldn't want to cross. So that's the 18th Zera.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, E Hochi the Mayor Nami Chastri Havion. In that case, the mayor, after all, agrees with that Zera, that Goyim are considered like Zalim. He also said that you have the Zera about the case with the barrels under the drain pipe, because he said that was Machlokas of Bishamah and Basilo, where Bishamah outvoted Basilo, and it's one of the 18 things. So according to him, Chastri Havion, and now you have 19.
Right.
The answer is, Uchlin, the Kalim, Shnit, Bumashkin, Kachoda, Choshevlo. The answer is, he would say like this. When we first quoted the Mishnah and Zavim about the various things that passel Truma, in that list we had foods and drinks that became, not foods, sorry, foods and Kalim that became Tomei through liquids. We said over there, you have liquids that are considered a Rishon L'Truma D'Rabbanan. Generally speaking, we said all liquids are considered a Rishon L'Truma D'Rabbanan, no matter what the source of Truma of them was. And we said they're able to be Matame food, and they're able to be Matame Kalim, both Midrabbanan. So until now, we were assuming that those are considered two separate Xeris. Now we're going to say that no, if we went to the mayor, we would consider that to be only one Xeris. And therefore, we're back down to 18. And then you have there's different other Rishonim who have different understandings of the Gemara over here. How exactly we arrive at 18, including you have one explanation of Rishonim that actually we break out the ones about bread and oil and wine and so forth, and don't count them all as one like Rashi is doing, but rather we count them all as separate ones. But in that case, we would count, as we said, Urchlim and Kalim Shinit Mumamashkin as one. We would count, for example, the Xeris about, a person eating Rishon Latumah food and Shani Latumah food. We'd count those both as one and so forth. So according to them also, you end up with 18 Xeris according to everybody.
Well, that's an easy way out, to count several decisions into one. What?
Because we know for a fact, what it is we know for a fact, everybody accepted that there were 18 Xeris. But how exactly we count, what counts as part of the 18 and what doesn't, that you had a machloikas. You already have, we said, there's machloikas Hanoyim. We had Rav Meir versus Rav Yossi. We had Rav Tauchin versus Rav Akiva. And now, in addition, I'm saying, you have other Rishonim who say that once the Gemara is saying over here that according to the Meir, we have to combine together Urshlim, Mekalim, Shinit, Mubamashkin, that according to him, we can also say there are certain other ones that we combine together because they're essentially just different aspects of the same Zera. For example, a person ate Rishon Latumah food and a person ate Shani Latumah food, that in both cases is considered a Shani Latumah. And that leaves us room, for example, say,
mm-hmm.
not Rashi over here, that for example, that the Xeris about past Akum and oil of Goyim and wine of Goyim, etc., should all be considered one big Zera, but rather that we can break those out and consider them separate Zeras. So according to whichever way you look at it, you always end up with 18.
So the ones that are similar enough can be grouped together.
Can be grouped together, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so that's that. So now we're finished with the Yud Ches Dover, and we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with the Mishnah at the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Beis. We're going to actually get back to Hilchot Shabbos now.
Does the Rambam give a list of these 18 Gzeres?
Well, all of these things, everybody agrees with all the dinim that we say. The question is which ones of them count, which ones of them count, and which ones doesn't. So the, I don't think that Rambam, the Rambam actually learned, we talked about the other day, the Rambam has an interesting explanation about this whole thing, but there's actually three sets of 18 giving. We said the Rambam learned that there were 18 halachas that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel unanimously agreed on. Those are the ones that we have at the beginning of our Masechta. So in particular, that includes, so he counts it like this. You have the eight cases where the Balabayas and the Oni are higher than Potter in the first Mishnah of Amasechna. Mm-hmm. You have five dinims of things that you're not allowed to do before Mincha, and five dinim that you're not allowed to do right before or on Shabbos, the subject of the third Mishnah. So according to him, those 18, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agreed on all of them. Then you have 18 that they disagreed on and then ended up, that Shammai ended up outvoting Beit Hillel. Those are the Yud Chesedava we just discussed. So now, for example, according to Rashi, two of the ones that we had before, the ones about not reading by candlelight and the ones about not picking out lights by candlelight, according to Rashi, count as among the Yud Chesedavah. According to the Rambam, they don't, because according to the Rambam learns that those are things that the Shammai and the Sibyl both completely agreed on, and they never had to take a vote on it in the first place. So again, according to the Rambam, you have 18 halachas that they agreed on, which are the first three mesechtas, which are the first three mishnayas of our mesechta. Then you have 18 more. Then you have 18 more that they disagreed on, which was the whole sugya that we just had, where Beit Shammai ended up outvoting Beit Hillel. And then, says the Rambam, you have a further set of 18 halachas, which are going to be the subject of the next couple of Mishnayos and the Gemara on them, where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel also disagreed on various details of the Hilchos Shabbos, and those they continued to disagree, and there we have the usual rule of halachas, like we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Okay.